And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a hand break off.
Hello and welcome to Handbreak Off, the Arsenal podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. Another podcast, you ask? Didn't you do one early in the week? Yes, we did, but Handbreak, like a lot of the podcasts of The Athletic, has now gone twice weekly. Most of the time, well, we'll be following games in the Europa League on the Friday ones. But in this particular case, we're going to delve a bit deeper into some of the tactics and player roles in this Arsenal team. And to do that, we're going to need some top quality, multi-talented Arsenal analysts. Luckily, we've got a couple handy. It's Art de Roche and Adrian Clark.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Nice to see you guys. So, Lucas Torreira has left the Arsenal, meaning that it is the official end of the Sven Mislintat era. James McNicholas has written a fascinating piece about that time. What we thought we'd do is we'll have a game of Mislintit or Mislintat, which I know that's of his signings. Essentially, who was the tit and who was the tat? Neither of them sound particularly positive, but we'll take a quick run through them. We'll do this pretty briefly. I should say before we do this, we bought that lot for 129.4 million and we sold him for 27.7 million. So Sven did not do particularly well financially. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, bought for 58, sold for a free. Art, tit or tat?
Well, I'm not really bringing finances into Aubameyang because I think he's probably the most positive one out of the bunch. So
yes, won us an FA Cup, didn't he?
So yeah, I think if tat is the positive one, then
it would have to be a positive one. Really, I'll tell you what, we'll go alternate. Adrian, Lucas Torreira, just gone 26 million, bought for, sold for 6.7.
I think you'd have to put Torreira down as a tit.
Really? He what about the goal against Tottenham?
I don't know if we didn't do a due diligence on whether he would adapt in England, you know, adapt to living over here. I think that's
how
the
can
issue.
You do yeah. that? How can you actually do that? I mean, in the end, it's down to the guy. You do the best you can with the language, help him buy a house, do all that stuff. But in the end, it's down to him, right?
It is. Yeah, it is. But yeah, it's a disappointment. I thought he started very well and then just completely fell off the radar, didn't he? So you'd have to say for 26 million, it was pretty wasteful. Not because he's a terrible player, just because he was disposed with very, very early.
So tit, essentially, is what we're saying for Lucas Torreira.
I think. That sounds a bit harsh, but yeah.
It does. Tat sounds harsh as well. But anyway, but we're saying tat's positive. Bernd Leno did well, I thought, was a decent keeper, just not quite up to the standard that we needed. Is that fair enough?
I mean, I'd say more than decent. I feel like he was, especially when you consider the point in time Arsenal were when, say, Petr Cech was in goal, and then he just came in and looked so much more composed.
He did.
Was brought a real, I guess, confidence behind the defence, which wasn't there beforehand. And then when you look at the late Emery era, early Arteta era, he was probably one of Arsenal's players of the year in 2020. So I'd say much more than decent. I just feel like, obviously, with the way Arteta's wanted to play from that position, he just doesn't have the tools that Ramsdale does. And so for that, I feel it'd be a bit harsh to say he was a tit. I think him and Aubameyang are probably the biggest tats on the list, I reckon.
You've had two kind ones there from Stone.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you got Adrian, you got Socrates.
Yeah, tit.
You're saying tit. The only thing I liked about Socrates, by the way, and it wasn't a huge amount, was when he used to put his arm around the referee and essentially go, I'm dealing with this. It's okay, ref, don't worry. We all get a bit heated in these moments. They're not good enough, really.
No, I just feel that we sort of misintact used his Dortmund connections maybe one too many times with that signing. Obviously, he was 30, I think, when he joined, around that age, and never the quickest. And we didn't have, you know, with Mustafi, we didn't have a lot of, you know, pace and mobility particularly there. Koscielny was ageing. What we needed was more of a, you know, a younger model, I think, a Gabriel type there, or a Saliba type at that time. So, yeah, 14.4 million for a 30-year-old that was never going to really improve the back four. I think that's a bad one.
No. Tit is what we're saying. Matteo Guendouzi, I mean, he's the only one, by the way, that we made a profit on. Our 7.2 million we bought him for, sold him for 8.5. But really a massive tit, essentially.
It's unfortunate. It actually really is, because I quite liked him as a player, especially that first season and then the first half season under Emery. I thought he was doing very well. And when you consider, I think he got his first call up for the national team after that win against Spurs,
where we looked the best player on the pitch.
Yeah, and it's just, I feel like you see probably he's the best kind of case with this, how differently someone's career can go depending on A, their application, B, how the manager perceives them. And you see, I think with Jorge Sampaoli, he's a manager who was obviously at Marseille last season, who tends to get the best out of those characters who are not probably, I guess, the safest players, probably the ones who are a bit more rogue, a bit more maverick. He tends to get quite good performances, seasons out of them. It's just unfortunate the way it turned out for Guendouzi at Arsenal. But yeah, he's probably the first one out of my lot that falls into the tit category.
I would say so.
He should have been worth much more than 8.5 million when he left. The reason he wasn't.
I agree.
Because as a footballer, he's worth a lot more, but they just couldn't wait to get rid of him. So, you know, that's why we lost a lot of money there, I think.
Yeah. Konstantinos Mavropanos, Adrian. I mean, just didn't really play that much. I remember him playing at Man United one time and looking a little bit out of his depth. He's got a bit of the Greek Pablo Mari, one could say, perhaps.
I'd go with Tap, because I don't want to be too harsh on him, because he never really had an opportunity. And I do think there's a player in there. I mean, you look at the stats from the Bundesliga last season.
He's done well.
Mavropanos is right up there among the leading central defenders in German football. So I think there's a real player there. He just came in at the wrong time. And maybe, I think with a young player, you've got to, if you make a great impression straight away in the first team, you're off and running, aren't you? But if you look wobbly in that first game or second game as well, then you might not get another chance. I think that's what happened with him.
Yeah, quite. Stefan Lichtsteiner, Art. I mean, he came for free, went for free. He was just, 48 when he came to us, something like that? I mean, he was very, very old, wasn't he, in footballing terms? I liked him a few years ago, but not for us, right?
No, I think the less said about his time at Arsenal, the better. I think we all know he's probably going in the tit category.
I think he is going in the tit category. I think that's fair enough.
The one thing I remember from him was in that 4-2 win against Tottenham, he was on the bench and I can't remember who scored, but he went to go and celebrate. He tried to knee slide and he buckled over over the top of himself. That, I guess, just showed nothing really worked for him in North London. So let's move on.
Thank you, Stefan. The last one, Henrik Mkhitaryan. He was a player exchange for Alexis Sanchez, wasn't he? Unbelievable that. And he went for a free and that's what he was worth. I mean, Adrian, lovely footballer at times, but just, I don't know, diffident. I don't know. There's something very small about the way he played, I think.
Yeah, it just didn't impact in games in the way that a player of his stature should have done. Too quiet, too timid. I mean, he's actually a really good pressing, attacking wide man. He's sort of known for, you know, winning the ball in advanced areas and making things happen, but it didn't happen often enough, did it?
Tit or tat?
I think it's got to be a tit. But but I like him as a player. I think there's a real player there. I don't think all of these players are bad players. It was just the wrong fit at the wrong time.
I think he was a very Wenger player, Mkhitaryan, and then only spent half a season with him. And then,
late Wenger player. I totally agree. Okay, that means the Tits win 5-3. Sven Mislin Tit is what we're going to call you from now on. Thank you very much for that lot. By the way, we are recording this podcast on the 12th of August, and on this day in 2018, Unai Emery had his first game as Arsenal manager, a 2-0 defeat to Man City. The interesting thing about this is the lineup, basically. Cech, Bellerin, Sokratis, Mustafi, Ainsley, Maitland-Niles, Guendouzi and Xhaka, Mkhitaryan, Ramsey, Ozil and Aubameyang, and Lichtsteiner, Lacazette and Torreira on the bench. The only players still at the club right now, as of this time of the recording, are Hector Bellerin, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, and of course Granit Xhaka, who I believe will still be playing for Arsenal when the earth runs out of water.
What, next year?
next year. <rate. laughs> Yeah. Okay, over on the Athletic website this week, change has been sweeping the nation. as tactical guru John Muller has declared that we should discuss positions no more. Instead, it's now all about player roles. Art, you wrote about this on the back of that piece. Can you just explain to us briefly what player roles means, Art, and why is it different?
It's not a particularly new idea, I'd say. People who've played Football Manager probably know all about them already. So I guess if you're looking at a centre forward, you could say, oh, that guy's a false nine, that guy's a target man, or look at it in a different way, or in an Arsenal perspective, the easiest way to maybe look at it is how they use their fullbacks. So Kieran Tierney overlaps a lot. He's basically on the touchline the whole game, whereas Zinchenko may go inside a bit more to progress the ball. So that's basically the, I guess, hopefully an easy explanation of it. Just people who play the same position, but they might play it in a different way. That's basically it.
There are 18 different player roles, aren't there? Is that right? I think I got that right. I think
that's what he's kind of come up with. Obviously, I think with some, there may be a bit of overlap, especially I think I found that was the case when doing that Saka piece, because as everyone who follows Arsenal knows, Saka's probably the most versatile player Arsenal have had in ages.
Well, we'll get to Bukayo Saka, because I want to talk about him specifically. But Adrian, you've had a look at this, right? I mean, you're statistically minded, a tactical guy. I mean, do you like this sort of stuff? Do you think it's useful?
I do, yeah, I like the concept of it. I mean, as Art says, I think it's nothing brand new. I think that managers and coaches, dating back to when I played, would have seen me, I don't know, me as more of an unlocker or a creator as a winger rather than a wide threat or one of these guys that crashes the box and whatnot. So I think The labels all make sense to me. I like the concept. What I think is good here is that we're using the data in quite a clear way to define players' styles. It's a good use of numbers, because I don't think we should ever be hung up on positions. In the course of a match, the shape looks completely different at various points. You know, I played left wing, right wing, left wing back, central midfield, number 10, striker. I played in all of those different positions. So, but I could look at this wagon wheel and say, actually, in all of those positions, I was probably this style of player. I think that's what I was. Probably, I don't know, an unlocker or a creator. It's probably what I was. I think it's a fairer definition for players. But the fluidity is interesting. I found Harry Kane's, I know we shouldn't mention Harry Kane on this podcast, but his change of style.
He's an Arsenal fan. It's perfectly fine.
Of course he is.
Yeah,
he probably listens. His change in style has been quite dramatic, and that is outlined with the use of the numbers in this piece from John Muller, which I thought was excellent. And Art's right about Saka. Saka is evolving all of the time into different categories. And I think if you've got players across three or four of these categories with one player, that's a really exciting thing to have.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about Saka, and like I say, we'll get to him. But just back to Zinchenko and Tierney for a while. If you're an opposing manager are and you're playing against Arsenal, if Zinchenko's in the team, you're setting up differently then if you go on what's going on here from if Kieran Tierney's in the team. If Kieran Tierney's in the team, you sort of get an idea, they're going to aim for him to overlap and get the crosses in, so we'll stop that. If Zinchenko's in the team, you're going to be slightly narrower in the way you play, say.
Yeah, and I think this is what we've been talking about from an Arsenal perspective basically all summer, where they're looking at players who not just add, say, depth and quality, but they pose different problems to opposition managers and players. So you're just less, I guess, predictable when you come up against, say, a team who wants to sit deep. You may use Tierney because he can get down the line and whip across in, or you may use Zinchenko to kind of go through the middle of the pitch and maybe unlock them that way. So I think, having different options helps most of the time, because you just get back to that point where the opposition's moving the whole time and they don't really know who to pick up.
You're pulling them about, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the key thing, I think.
I think that this outlook, or this way of looking at players, defining them, is very helpful for managers, because you need a balance, don't you? There's no point having three guys in behind the main striker that are all in the same category, for example. So yeah, you probably want one wide threat, one creator, one, I don't know, box crasher, I think was one of the terms there. But again, it's nothing new. Good managers like to find balanced teams where you have different types of players to offer varying qualities in and out of possession. So yeah, that's all it is. But I found it interesting to read and to look at, and it's probably the way I view football anyway, rather than positions.
Yeah, but as you say, it's an evolved way of looking at football, isn't it? When you see the way Man City play and the way Arsenal are trying to play, the way that the fullbacks have different roles, and sometimes they come in and sometimes they go out wide. And it's not, you know, I grew up in an era where it was 1-2-11, and 2 and 3 were the fullbacks, and 4 and 5 were the, or 5 and 6 were the centre backs, and 4 was, you know, listen, anyone over a certain age will be able to tell you exactly what positions those players played in.
You did, and it was a bit more in straight lines, I guess, because the style of football has improved, hasn't it? I think modern football, there's a bit more sophistication about English teams generally than there were years ago, and there's a bit more movement. But I remember playing for Stevenage in a friendly against Arsenal in 2001 or 2000, not long after I'd left, actually, and goodness me, I'd been used to playing, I think, in Leagues 1 and Leagues 2. So then coming up against them, albeit in a friendly, the movement was insane. Yeah. You know, players were popping up here, there and everywhere. And this was going back 20 years now. Again, it's not new. That Arsene Wenger had players drifting into pockets and others moving out wide. It's not a revolution, but it's but I think, yeah, in general, tactics have become more sophisticated of late.
They have. I mean, we looked. You had a look particularly at Bukayo Saka. I mean, years ago, I would have described Bukayo Saka really as a winger, to be honest with you. I mean, he takes people on, goes outside, crosses the ball. He's not Stanley Matthews, for those of a certain vintage. He's not one of the guys like Steve Coppell or someone like that. But he has, you know, he certainly has the qualities of a wing player, but he's much more than that. How would you describe him using one of these 18 criteria? I mean, in terms of what he does the most?
Well, I mean, even doing that, I feel is almost a disservice to Saka, because I guess he is a wide threat because he plays on the right mostly and stays high and wide, is able to commit a player, go both ways, inside and out, and combines really well with those around him. But looking at Bukayo Saka, the football player, for his whole career, I just say he's an all-rounder.
He's a baller, isn't he? Essentially. I mean, listen, let's be fair. Aside from centre-half, he could play pretty much any position on the pitch, couldn't he?
Exactly.
And I think he's that good.
You see, he came in as, well, he did come in as a winger, but then had to fill in at left back / left wing back. So I guess he'd view him more as an overlapper during that time. But then in his second full season, so 2020-21, that season, he played, I think he played left back, left wing, right wing, centre mid. And in all those kind of positions, he didn't look out of place. And I think what he developed was just, or maybe he already had it, he just needed to show it to people, was he was capable of performing different roles to a very high standard. And I just feel like Arsenal probably don't, or many teams don't have a player like that who can just fill in wherever they need to. And it gives Arsenal a lot of flexibility, which they need. But if we're looking at, say, how his game's evolved, he's definitely become more of a wide threat because he is out on that right wing a lot more.
Is that the best use of his talents then, in that position where he is at the moment? I mean, right now, Mikel Arteta thinks it is, but do you agree?
It's working, isn't it?
If it's working, is working. It is.
He looks very good. He's contributing. Yeah. This is in the here and now, he is a wide threat. I like the way he stretches opposition teams, plays high. He can run in behind with the ball. He can run in behind without it. And his decision-making is just off the scale good, really, in and around the final third. That's what separates him, in my opinion, from the vast majority of other good young players. In those key moments, he makes the right choices 9 times out of 10. And he's a very special player. I've looked at this wagon wheel of 18 different qualities, and I think you could put Saka in 11 of them. That's how good he is. That's how good and how varied he is. And what he is now, he's a wide threat. He could easily develop into a central midfielder, in my opinion, in the future because of his technical ability and, you know, the willingness to sort of see those forward passes. So, yeah, we can use him kind of wherever we like. But in the here and now, because he's young, because he's getting more and more powerful, I think, with every passing season, it suits him to be that wide guy.
A wide threat, by the way, if you need a definition, a player who stretches the back line, gets into the penalty area and is as comfortable supplying the final ball as they are finishing it, which is certainly Bukayo Saka. One thing you said, Art, in the piece, that you said that he developed this thing where he was controlling the ball on the back foot to basically give himself even more space. I mean, these are the fine margins we're talking about, right?
Yeah, so that whole thing about receiving on the back foot is something that I kind of got a little bit obsessed with, because you just saw players who were able to do that were just gave themselves so much more time and space than players who, say, if their back's to goal and they receive on the front foot, their first touch takes them towards their own goal. Whereas if you receive it on their back foot, you're able to take it on that foot and then your next touch is forwards. So Smith Rowe did it a lot when he first broke into the team, and it's why he was able to speed Arsenal's play up so quickly. Phil Foden does it a lot, Mason Mount as well, and there are loads of players who've done it for years. It's not like this new skill or whatever. It's just,
I remember Robert Pires doing it.
Pires did it a lot as well, and I feel like when you have a player who's so technically proficient, it raises the level of the team so much, because you're able to play so much more quickly, and again, just keep yourself, or keep the opposition guessing, because they're not going to be able to live with that. Everyone talks about Saka being this quick, powerful player, but I think within that, you can't really forget how good technically he is as well, because that is something that really does elevate him past other players, I feel.
Yeah, there was Ben M, who made a comment on the Athletic site just briefly. He said, I'd be intrigued to see where someone like Granit Xhaka fits in with his new role. Adrian, I mean, we know holding midfield player is not necessarily his best position, because Arsene Wenger played him there for 3 years. I think I watched Graham Souness pick apart his lack of tracking back on about 8 different occasions, or Alan Shearer on Match of the Day. But Where does he fit in on this wagon wheel then? Or is it not that important? In the end, if you have one type of player, you know that you're going to need another type of player, and you go, even if you're not exactly the sort of person who can do this role, we need you to do this role because we've got this other guy next to you who does that role.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's about balance. I mean, one thing that's maybe absent on this list is sort of a stopper, because it's all the midfield positions are based around what they're like on the ball. There's not too much of a reference to what they do in regards to breaking up play, etc.
Yeah, where's Claude Makélélé in here?
Exactly. So I think if there's one flaw, and I don't want to be critical of it because I think it's a really good idea, and there's so much I like about it. But yeah, that there is a bit of a hole there. Thomas Partey is the builder. Okay, so he's the one that builds the attacks from deep. He gets the ball in deep areas and starts the moves. Xhaka can do that, but he's not quite as good as Thomas Partey out there. I would say he's very clearly a distributor. That's the category, the definition of which is favours longer, more direct passes and switches, active in the opponent's half more than a defensive. And I think when you think about when Xhaka gets on the ball, it's mainly in the opposition half. He's looking to play those forward passes.
Well, we will go deeper into that next week because we want to do one. Although Art has his hand up, so go on, Art. You want to say something?
Yeah, this is major.
We started
credit.
Ben.
Yeah, this is major credit to Adrian because I had a similar thought to Ben. So I asked what was Xhaka's kind of roles, so first few seasons at Arsenal, he's more of a distributor. And then everyone remembers when Arteta came in, he made him more... At the time, we called it more of a quarterback kind of thing, where he'd drop in between the left-back and the left-centre-back. And for those two seasons, so 2019-20, 2020-21, he was more of a builder, which probably makes sense because he was a lot deeper. And then last year, he was more of a distributor again, which, again, makes sense because of what Adrian was saying in terms of him going into more advanced areas.
I've got a stat for you, which I think is quite interesting. In 2017-18, he completed nearly 3,000 passes. I think 2,727. Last season, albeit with 10 fewer matches, it was less than half of that. That's the evolvement. So basically, he's getting less of the ball. He's making fewer passes, but he's getting onto the ball a little bit higher up the pitch. I think that's the key difference. And you box to box is probably the other term that he could fit into, I guess. But I don't see him as a natural box to box guy. His strength is getting it and playing a forward pass. I think he does it very well for all the, you know, flaws and the reasons why people aren't sure about Granit. He is very good at distributing the ball.
4 years later, after Unai Emery's first team, he's the only one still in it on any sort of regular basis. Well, there you go, Ben. We were going to do it next week. We seem to have done it now. There's plenty of others we can look at. This is Handbrake Off, Ian Stone, Art de Rochan, Adrian Clark here with you.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We were a bit with the handbrake at time.
Let's talk a bit about the captaincy. Martin Odegaard is the captain. Granit Xhaka has been speaking about how he doesn't need an armband to be the leader. I think there's no doubt that he's a leader in the dressing room. Adrian, how important is a captain nowadays? I mean, back when you played, which sounds like you played in like 1848 or something, but you know what I mean, right?
Not far off.
Back when you played, remember when everyone was wearing top hats? Do you remember that? And they played in morning dress. Those were great days. You used to smoke a pipe when you were playing in midfield, didn't you? Back in those days, captains, I mean, Tony Adams, of course, who we will come to because there's some news regarding TA, but he was the captain. But there were other leaders on the pitch as well. There were plenty of others. How important is that role now?
I like to be in teams that have a strong captain, someone that sets the right examples, and that opposition teams fear a little bit. I think when Patrick was captain, I think that was a really, you know, when he stood at the front of the line, I thought it made a difference. I really did. Same with Tony Adams, such a strong player, a legend. So yeah, I think it makes a bit of a difference, but you've got to have lots of leaders. Like Lee Dixon was very so many of that team in the mid 90s were leaders, and they loved football, and you see how much they love football because they're still all in the game. Ian Wright, you know what, he was a leader. He didn't very rarely had the armband. I think I played in one of the games where he actually had it against Everton. He scored a goal and he did that famous sort of touching the armband celebration. Yeah, an absolute leader. So the only danger is, and this is from my experience, is if you have too many leaders or too many strong voices in the dressing room that have conflicting messages, it's a big problem. If you've got two or three guys that are saying one thing and another person saying something else, it becomes a mess. You've got to all be on the same page as regards to what the manager wants. And if you are, then these vocal presences help the younger guys. They help the rookies hugely. If it's muddled and the messages aren't the same, then it's just chaos, and that's where big problems occur. I don't think that's an issue right now at Arsenal, I have to say.
No,
it's heading in the right direction.
When you see sometimes with the French at the World Cup or the Dutch or something,
exactly.
And it's not
a good example.
It's not particularly helpful. I agree, but when I mean, we've all said, Martin Odegaard, you know, captain of Norway, he's got that quiet authority that people look to. I mean, we talked about this the other week, but he is the right choice. But you need others as well, don't you, to step up? In cricket, you have a sort of captaincy, a leadership group, don't you? So you have the captain, you have about three or four others. And maybe that's the sort of thing you need in a football team as well.
Yeah, well, obviously Unai Emery tried to do that first at Arsenal. And Arteta was actually asked about it last week, whether they're still is going to be a leadership group. And he said, yes. He didn't say who was in it, but we've all seen what Granit Xhaka's had to say about it. And I think he's just said what most people know. It's just nice that it's actually come from his mouth. And I just feel like these guys are adults. They're not in secondary school anymore. They're going to have to regulate themselves when Arteta's not around. I don't think anyone should be looking at it as be all and end all of Arsenal Football Club. It's just get on with it. You guys are running the dressing room and that's fine.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to sit in on a seminar with Ian Foster, the head coach of the All Blacks. And it was a fascinating listen. It really was. And so much of it was about leadership groups and empowering the players to make the right decisions on the pitch. So basically that they will have very separate meetings with the leadership group, whereby the manager will pass on so many observations, but they'll also talk it through as a group where they're sort of peer to peer and they thrash out what they think is going to work. And then the idea is that the manager really doesn't have to do too much on a match day because they're all empowered to make the right calls at the right times. Now, rugby is a very different game to football. It's more stop-start. It's more, there's less flow to it. It's more predictable. So I think it works better in rugby than football. But I think the premise is a good one. And if you have that leadership group, it does also mean that those more vocal characters are on the same page as the manager, which is absolutely crucial.
And one more thing, Adrian, what about this whole idea, you know, that we used to hear them say, Tony Adams used to say, you need seven in the trenches, because that was one of the things that people used to complain about late Wenger Arsenal, was that there weren't enough people who would step up and fight for you. When you looked at early Wenger Arsenal and you had Dennis Bergkamp and you had Lauren and you had Ray Parlour and you had all these players who, if there was a fight, basically would jump in. I mean,
it's trust,
that's what,
yeah.
But you need that, don't you? You need that. And that's what we're talking about with captaincy. That's what people used to talk about, with captaincy in the past. It's a subtly different role now, but you need that, don't you? That fight on the pitch.
You need to know that if you muck up, your mate's going to be behind you to save the day, and it's going to cover your back. And that trust builds up over time. And normally in away games, tough away games, that is where you see who's prepared to fight and dig in and push themselves to the absolute limit to make sure that you don't get beaten, for example, or you don't concede a goal. And once, you know, players come through those stiff tests, that's when the Tony Adams will say, well, yeah, he'll do for me. And the more of those you can get into the team, obviously, the better. And I mean, I look at the team at the moment, the Arsenal team, I don't see any like obvious weak links, sort of players that will let you down attitude-wise. I think in the latter Wenger years and during the Emery period and the early Arteta time, there were one or two you could look out and say, can I trust them week in, week out to put in that 110%, and that's where you need to get to.
That's quite. I mean, Art, you were speaking with Aaron Ramsdale, and that quote that he talked about, Gabriel Magalhães, doesn't speak much English, but with the Portuguese and Brazilian lads, he's definitely someone who has a voice. I mean, essentially, that's a little subgroup, isn't it, almost, where Gabby's Gabby is the leader of the other Gabbies, essentially, in that
big
particular
Gabby,
case.
Big Gabby's the leader.
Big Gabby, as opposed to, the other Gabbies. But that's the point, isn't it, really? You have these subgroups as well, and players, so the defenders maybe will look after each other. In this particular case, the Portuguese-speaking lads will look after each other. These things are important.
Yeah, I think when you look at Adrian's example from rugby, obviously in rugby it's very, I guess, much segmented in some ways, where they have the forwards and then the backs. So you can look at it from that perspective in rugby and football. You still have units. You have your defensive unit, which might include a few midfielders in there. So maybe Thomas Partey, Granit Xhaka would be a bit deeper in midfield. And I think even in one of the Amazon All or Nothing episodes, there literally is a defenders meeting where they talk about how compact they are. So I think you would have those voices within those units that are more prevalent. So if you say Big Gabby with the Portuguese speaking guys, that makes sense. And I think also just in terms of the character as well, even if he's not speaking English, say if Ben White or Rob Holding's next to him, I think they know that they can depend on him. So I think, yeah, across the board, you have those little subsections which make up the unit as one. So I don't think there's any hurt in having those people who maybe lead one pocket and then are seen as those seven in the trenches, maybe those individual leaders come up as one.
Well, it's working at the moment, isn't it? And we'll see against Leicester tomorrow. Finally, before we will. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. But we'll see. Finally, Tony Adams is joining the Strictly Come Dancing cast. You may have seen the news. I mean, listen, he's been writing poetry and playing the piano for the last 15 years. It was an inevitable consequence, wasn't it, really? He'll be up at the Edinburgh Festival with me in a couple of years, won't he? 4:15 at the Pleasance Grand. Adrian, you knew him from his playing days. Have you seen him dancing?
I think, well, with Tony Adams, you have to you see two people. You got original Tony, and you've got the Tony of now, and the original
Tony.
Well,
it's drinking Tony and non-drinking Tony, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Really? Yeah, so, yeah, drinking Tony would just be at the bar. He'd never be... He'd only be on the dance floor late doors. Modern Tony, I suspect, has probably had salsa lessons and he's very comfortable, certainly in the costumes. He's not going to worry about that. I mean, anyone that's seen Tony's clobber in recent years with those bright suits will realise that he's not shy.
It's been like a three-year audition for Strictly, isn't it, really? So, these are the clothes he's been wearing.
Footballers are competitive, so I think he will be super competitive and work really, really hard. But he's definitely not a natural. I mean, you would imagine he's a bit ungainly with some of the quicker stuff. But I think with the tango, the waltz, I think he's got that stature. I think he'll absolutely love that, standing tall.
Yeah.
The quicker stuff, I can't wait to watch it. I really can't. I don't really watch Strictly, but I definitely will this year with TA in it. It's going to be awesome.
Are you worried about some of the Latin stuff? Do you think he can shake his hips enough? Ooh. I mean, I don't know.
Maybe if he's playing on the wing. I like Adrian, I never really pay attention to Strictly Come Dancing, but maybe this year I might give a few episodes a watch.
Gooners, come on. You've got to watch Tony Adams on Strictly Come Dancing.
If Arsenal fans get behind him, he can stay in all the way through.
Well, that is the point, really. If he applies himself, which you know he will, because he is that guy, right? If he applies himself and he actually gets pretty good, the Arsenal vote could carry him quite a long way. Definitely worth a little long odds bet there, Tony Adams on Strictly Come Dancing. So let's have a song to end this podcast. Art, what have you got for us?
All right, again, there's no reason really behind this. Actually, there is. I usually put a clip out whenever Ben White has a good game. It's the theme song from a cartoon called Ben 10, which was on Cartoon Network a few years ago. So I'm going to go for that because he played quite well at Palace. And I actually need to figure out a song to go for William Saliba at some point, so I'll go for that.
All right, get working on William Saliba. In the meantime, Adrian, what you got?
I'm going to go for Whitney Houston. I want to dance with somebody because Tony definitely wants to dance with somebody and he doesn't yet know who he's going to dance with, does he? Eagerly waiting for his partner. So, yeah, Tony Adams, I want to dance with somebody.
All right, well, I've gone for a similar theme. I've gone for Sister Sledge and the greatest dancer, of course. Anyway, that's it. Leicester, tomorrow, if you're listening on Friday, up the Arsenal, of course. And... thank you to Art, and thank you to Adrian, and thank you to Abby, our producer. This is Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.